First, though, let's welcome back to the program nutritional consultant Pam Colleen. How are you?
I'm great, Tom. How are you today?
I am excellent. Happy Halloween. How was it in your neck of the woods?
Well, it was, I have to say, pretty quiet around here. Not too many takers. I think the rain, it was raining in London, so I think that might have warded off some of the trick-or-treaters.
Okay. Anyway, it's one night of indulgence, and even then, you know, you put a limit on what your kids have. So last night, of course, I tried not to overindulge because I'm trying to watch what I eat, especially sugar. So I'm trying to eat less sugar, but still, I have to admit, I had a couple of mini chocolate bars. I'll get back on the program today.
Good for you.
All right. Now, you sent me an interesting email. Well, as people know, we don't spontaneously do this program, although most of the time I spontaneously do the program. But you and I talk a little bit beforehand, and you said you wanted to talk today about something that a lot of people wouldn't give a second thought about. Because the number one thing people say when you're trying to be healthy, make sure you eat 3 square meals. Make sure you have a decent breakfast to start the day. And the fact is, a lot of people choose something that isn't the healthiest thing to start with, and that's cereal. Why is cereal not the best thing to start with?
Well, you know, first of all, it's loaded with sugar. It gives the body a huge insulin spike in the morning, and it's highly processed on top of that. So these cereals are formed during an extrusion process, and during this process, not only are they using heat, they're using pressure, and so they're damaging the proteins that are within the grains themselves. And so there's all sorts of problems with extruded cereals.
So, what's an extruded cereal? So give me an example of what an extruded cereal is.
Well, these would be any cereals, any kind of shape. So your Cheerios or whatever, you know, the round cereal.
Oh, okay.
Flakes or squares or any of those shapes. In order to turn into a cereal with any kind of form, of course, they have to go through this huge, huge industrial strength, you know, machine, and it's called an extruder. And so that requires heat and pressure. And so it's really, really damaging to the actual protein structures within the actual grain itself. And then, of course, these sugars, over half of the cereal is usually sugar as well.
Wow. All right. So is there, when we look at, is there an unextruded cereal that you can look at and say, all right, you know what, if you're going to have cereal, this is what you should be doing? Or, I mean, you talk about, you know, well, go back to where you were from ethnically, mm-hmm. and look at what they ate for breakfast. Mm-hmm. What about something, you know, if you're from Scotland, what about something like oatmeal? Is that so bad?
Right. That's right. So you want to, if you do have cereal in the morning, make sure it's not an extruded form of cereal, a boxed cereal, if you will. There are the granolas, which aren't extruded, and you can actually make your own granola, and it can be a lot healthier that way if you make it yourself. And then there are indeed porridges. And so what you want to remember with grain all the time is it should be prepared in advance. So grain has to be pre-digested, in other words, and oatmeal is no exception. So what you need to do with oats is you need to soak them overnight first before you cook them up in the morning. And that essentially what it does is it breaks down what are known as the anti-nutrients that are within the grain. And this is what isn't being respected in big food. When you go into the grocery store and you look on the shelves and you see all the cookies and the crackers and the breads and so on, these grains have not been properly treated so that your body can digest them or break them down properly.
All right, so what happens in the body with these crackers and cookies and cereals you talk about? If it doesn't break down, if you don't have these enzymes, or, you know, it's not going to break down, what goes on in your gut then?
Well, what happens is things like phytic acid haven't been broken down, and what phytic acid does is it prevents your body from absorbing minerals. Other anti-nutrients that are in there would be trypsin inhibitors, potentially, or, the proteins that are in there wouldn't be broken down properly, and that can cause a reaction in the body as well. So you really want to honor the fact that these grains historically have always been soaked and fermented at some level, and that's why we see things in certain cultures like sourdough bread. And when you have sourdough bread, essentially the grain within that bread has had some time to be pre-digested, so it takes the burden off your digestive tract.
Wow. All right. And so if I make my oatmeal, so I get the steel-cut oats, mm-hmm. and then I put it in the crock pot overnight, so it cooks for 8 hours, that's pretty good?
Yep, you soak it overnight, and then you cook it up in the morning, and then you load it up with butter. You load it up with coconut oil. You can throw some raisins in there, some cinnamon. You can sweeten it with raw honey or some local maple syrup. I mean, you can. I always say you can decorate it to your heart's desire, but make sure you load it up with some good fats.
All right, and then I got a couple questions for you from listeners. All right, Chris wants to know, what about All Bran, the shredded kind? Tastes terrible, but 12 grams of fiber.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've done a show on fiber and the fiber myth. You want to stay away from any of the cereals that are high in fiber. Fiber is really, really irritating to the digestive tract. It can cause a lot of problems. Our intestines are designed for animal fat, animal protein, and small amounts of fiber. The notion of fiber is simply a marketing scheme. The more claims a cereal box, for instance, can put on it, the more likely a consumer is going to buy it. And this fiber myth has been, you know, one of the greatest driving forces in terms of increasing the sales of these products that are not good for you to begin with.
How much fiber do I need then?
Well, according to the National Cancer Institute, they're saying, you know, anywhere from 20 to 30 grams of fiber a day, which might be, you know, depends on what you're eating. But if you're eating some fruits and vegetables, not a lot, but some fruits and vegetables, you should be getting enough fiber.
Yeah.
It might be 6 servings of fruits and vegetables together over the course of a day. It really depends on the vegetable and the size of the serving.
Yeah, 20 to 30 grams doesn't sound like a lot. And if that's all you need, you probably don't need a high fiber supplement or a high fiber cereal, unless you have no fiber in the rest of your diet, which probably wouldn't be the greatest diet. But it just seems, you know, 12 grams of fiber, we don't need much fiber after that then.
No, when you look at primitive cultures who don't eat a lot of fiber in their diets, they have good digestion, they have normal bowel movements. You know, there's it's just crazy, this myth that has surfaced with regards to fiber. Remember, it started with puritanicals back in the 1800s, Dr. Sylvester Graham, Dr. Harvey Kellogg, and they pushed a high-fiber diet in order to destroy your sex drive, your libido. So this is why we see where we see the roots of this high-fiber myth.
All right, here's one from Brad. What's the best way to make your own granola, he asks. Does she have a recipe we could download? Thanks, Seabass. I love granola, too. Oh.
Yeah, you know, it's just, yeah, you basically would dry it in the oven. You mix your mash together. It would be, you know, oats, and you could add some raisins in there, some nuts in there, and you mash it. You basically, you know, stir it all together. You can add, again, some sweetener like raw honey or maple syrup, and you basically dry it in a low-heat oven for several hours, and you have to, you know, stir it around. But if you type in, you know, if you Google in a recipe for granola, you'll easily find it on the internet.
All right. So, and one of the things that people knock about granola is the fat content. It's like, oh, look at the fat in granola. But as you point out, it's like, fat's not your enemy. Fat, we need essential fatty acids, and our body, it runs on fat. We need fat in our diet.
Absolutely, especially the animal fats.
Yeah. People, granola, that was always the thing about granola. Oh, yeah, there's fat in granola. Granola's not like, it's like, no, that's the, maybe that's why I love it, because I love the taste of granola. All right, Pam Colleen telling us about breakfast cereals. Now, when we come back, Pam, we'll talk more about, there's an interesting book called Wheat Belly.
Yes.
And as you say, wheat is the new meat. Tell us your concerns about wheat, and then, as you mentioned before, it's not just cereals, but cookies and crackers and breads and all these things that are based around wheat, and why we should be concerned about our wheat intake. All right. So when we come back, we'll talk about this new book, Wheat Belly, but also how much wheat you're taking in and why it may not be good for you. 17 minutes after 11 o'clock. My name's Tom McConnell. I'm joined by nutritional consultant Pam Colleen, and this is News Talk 610 CKTV. 21 minutes after 11 o'clock. Pam Colleen's a nutritional consultant who joins us every other week to talk about eating healthier and challenging the assumptions that we have about food. And Pam earlier was in contact with me, and she was like, you know what? Why don't we talk about breakfast cereal, because so many people, you know, reach for it first thing in the morning, and it's probably, you know, one of the least healthy choices you can make. And then I was intrigued because there's a book out now by Dr. William Davis called Wheat Belly, Pam, and it says lose the wheat, lose the weight, and find your path back to health. And it's not just people who are gluten, who are celiac disease or gluten intolerant. That for most people, they eat way more wheat or wheat products than they should.
That's right. And in the book, he says, you know, that we're potentially getting about 20% of our calories from wheat. And he followed the advice of dietary dictocrats, and he did what they said in terms of eating lots of fruits and vegetables and lots of whole grains. And of course, he ended up very sick for it. And then as he did more research and started observing clinical changes in people as they removed wheat from their diet, he saw nothing but good things happen in terms of their overall health, including his own health. So, he has been able to see people as they've removed wheat from their diet. He's been able to see people lose up to 70 pounds just easily. He's been able to see people reverse digestive disorders, certain arthritic conditions, asthma, and better mood, all sorts of improvements simply by removing wheat from the diet. And, I mean, he talks about the differences in wheat and how it's been changed by man over the last several thousand years. And so, you know, it's a lot of it has to do with the fact that the wheat that we eat today isn't the wheat that we ate yesterday. The other element that he doesn't acknowledge in the book, though, is that if you do eat grains, you must soak and ferment them first before eating them. And I think that does take away some of the challenges that we see with eating grains in general. So it's a really compelling book. I do recommend the book. I think that it's going to, help millions of people. The problem, of course, is he's making a lot of enemies with, big food, if you will. You know, the wheat and all of the other interest groups that are associated with that food. So he's running into some pressure from them. But I think people today, they're so sick, Tom. People are so sick today. They're looking for answers, and this book is just really simple. It offers a very simple way that people can actually start to improve their health just by removing the wheat from their diet.
You know, and you made a great line. We've never been more stuffed yet starved at the same time. That while we pack our bodies full of, for lack of a better term, you know, high caloric foods that have nothing other to offer than calories, you know, other than, you know, fat is one thing, but our body needs fat as a building block in every cell, protein as well. Mm-hmm. But carbohydrates are nothing but energy. That's it. And when we don't use that energy, the body uses fat cells as a gas tank. You know what? Well, I don't need all the energy now. I'll take it. I'll convert it into my fat cells, not fat. Carbs. And so when we look at, you know, when we think of, oh, it's carbs, it's, you know, I gotta eat carbs and don't worry about carbs. People have such a misconception about carbs.
That's right. Well, I mean, it's carbohydrates that drive insulin and insulin that drives fat.
Yeah.
And Dr. Davis is a cardiologist, and he, you know, used to believe that it was fat that
drove
heart disease. And it's not. It's carbohydrates that cause the problems with cholesterol or heart disease in general. So as soon as he started removing wheat from his heart patients' diets, of course, their heart conditions cleared up. Things like that, you know, and so he is firm on his research, just not just from what he's got in the book, and he's compiled a tremendous amount of research, but it's just his clinical observations as well. And this is not the first book that has been written to confirm this, by the way. There's another wonderful book called Life Without Bread by Dr. Wolfgang Lutz, and in over 40 years of clinical observations, he noticed nothing but good things that would happen if people would just control the intake, their overall intake of carbohydrates in general. And when I say carbohydrates, I'm talking about fruits, vegetables, and grains, because they're all sources of sugar.
Now, are there good substitutions or good rules? I mean, you talk about a sourdough, for instance, and a partly fermented grain. But when we look at, you know, flours and grain products, if I'm going to have, for instance, a bread, or if I'm going to bake with something, what are the substitutes that I should be making? Like, what choices are the good ones for me? If there's not, you know, great choices, but what's a better choice for me to make?
Well, if you're using grain at all, make sure it's certified organic grain. There are some less hybridized forms of grain out there, that things like your spelt, your kamut. You know, some people do fine on oats and oat flour, millet. There are alternatives out there that people tend to do very well on. The problem that people run into by doing this, though, is they can still overconsume grains in general.
Okay.
There may be less gluten in these grains, but still people can overconsume them as well. So you have to be very, very careful with that notion.
So no matter what, you may be able to make healthier substitutions, but the big problem is the total overall consumption of grains and grain products is what you really have to look out for.
That's right. And you want to get the nutrient-dense foods like meat, eggs, dairy, and so on.
Pam, always enlightening, always a pleasure. Take care. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Tom.
Pam Colleen talking about what an interesting book, Wheat Belly, it's called. lose the wheat, lose the weight. And this goes along with what Pam has been saying. Here's a totally different guy, not connected. It's like, you know what? It's not the fat, it's not the meat, it's the grains. Watch out for the grains you eat, and then all the biological processes that go on in the body that trigger reactions, but also pile on the pounds, which help you pile on the pounds as well.